Peter Pig, so yeah. They're gonna talk about sweet, sweet RPGs. And it's the Titter Pigs, the RPG podcast. Am I getting paid for this one?
We are back for episode 22 of Titter Pigs. In the studio tonight, we're going to do something a little different. We've got with us David Larkins from Chaosium. Scott, what are we doing with David tonight?
We are definitely not recording a second time because we forgot to press the record button, but we are going to be playing Pendragon, a game that I am very excited to be playing. And as I've stated on the social medias, this is also going to be doing a dual purpose for me as I'm running this game this weekend. And this is going to count as prep. And what better way than not only to play the game as opposed to just kind of reading it and hope for the best, but to, the lead designer of this game and Pendragon and whatnot, show us how it's to be done right. David, welcome. Done as right as it could be.
There is no right way.
I mean, right. You're very true. But still, I mean, to make sure that I'm, following at least the rules, sure. Because that's the best I can hope for. But again, welcome, David. Welcome back. Welcome back. We appreciate you taking the time to come run this game for us.
Of course. Yeah. Thanks for having me back. It's a pleasure to be here. And glad I can help your con prep.
I think his players are going to be very happy too. So
yeah,
it's a win all the way around. Before we get into the, letting David take the reins, let us do a quick introduction for listeners, for our players. So playing tonight's game is going to be Roz. Say hi, Roz.
Hi, Roz.
Pookie, who's a frequent flyer on the show.
Good morning.
And then obviously Scott will be a player. I'll be a player myself. And then David will be behind the virtual GM screen running the game for us. So, David, we're going to turn everything over to you. And the show is yours, my friend.
Okay, great. Well, as Scott indicated, tonight we will be playing the quick start scenario from the Gen Con 2022 promo. This is called the Adventure of the Sword Tournament. And it's actually also serves a dual purpose because it is taken from the contents of the forthcoming Pendragon starter set. So this is actually the first act of the first scenario in our little campaign pack that we have in the starter set. So I find it generally, moves along pretty quickly. It's not a long scenario, of course, unless you want it to be. But as far as what's written, you get through it pretty quickly. We'll see how we do tonight. And, we'll talk a little bit after the adventure wraps up as well, just so that we can maybe, talk about our impressions of the game, because my understanding is that 3 out of 4 of you are new to the game. Is that correct?
Yes.
I played Pendragon before.
So 2 out of 4. Okay. Well, that's not too bad. But I'll go over the rules regardless for newcomers and veterans alike. And then we'll jump in. I understand you've all selected one of the pre-generated characters that comes with the starter set as well. And I'll give you guys a chance to go through and introduce yourselves and your characters shortly after we get into the scenario. Mm-hmm. I think before we jump into the scenario, we can just talk about the rules a little bit and the game and how the game works. So as the name Pendragon indicates, this is a game set in the time of King Arthur, the Knights of the Round Table, etc. And the conceit of the game is that everybody plays a knight. So this is not your sort of typical ragtag band of, you know, various and sundry adventurers. You all kind of occupy the same general stratum of society. You all sort of have the same job, as it were. Where the game shines, in my opinion, is in exploring what makes your knight unique. The tales of Arthur are filled with very distinctive personalities. You know, every knight in the canon is, every well-known knight maybe, is distinguished by their loves, their hates, what drives them. And also, a common theme in Arthurian tales is knights being driven to do things against their better judgment by those beliefs and passions. So Pendragon replicates that. We have two statistics, traits and passions. And those are really what, those are the core of your characters. Those are what kind of drive your characters. It can help you decide on a course of action if you're not sure. Or sometimes it can even force your hand, particularly if you are well known in a particular trait or passion. So the setting, the time that we're starting this on, Pendragon exists on the spectrum of the Arthurian myths. And so the game's creator, Greg Stafford, in addition to, you know, his very elegant game design work, also applied his deep knowledge of Arthurian legend to create a cohesive timeline that runs from before the time of King Uther, the Arthur's predecessor, all the way to the final battle where Arthur falls and the dream dies. This is at least 80 game years long. And so, yes.
What you're saying is, just like in his other game, Glorantha, the most important question is, what year is it?
What year is it, exactly? So the year is 510. And for those veteran Pendragon listeners, they'll know that this is the year that the future of Britain changes forever. Just put it that way. So we will, as we get into the scenario, I'll give you guys a little capsule history of what's going on in Britain and, you know, why you might be present at this sword tournament. So a quick review of the mechanics, I think, before we jump in. So game's very simple, just uses two types of dice, a D20 and a D6. At a minimum, you need one D20, and it's handy if you have a little handful of D6s, four or five or six of them, usually enough for most uses. The D20 is pretty much used for any task resolution or just rolling against any of the values on your character sheets. Your character's statistic values range from 1 to 20, and you roll a D20 against that value, and it's kind of the blackjack rule. You want to get as high, as close to that number, that target number, without going over on your roll. So, for instance, if you had a, let's say, a reckless trait, and I asked you to roll against your reckless trait to see if you do something untoward. And so let's say you had a reckless trait of 15, because you're particularly reckless. You would roll the D20. And if you rolled 15 or under, that means you're going to act recklessly. If you roll 16 or higher, then, you know, you're free to act however you like. If you rolled a 20, that's actually a fumble. So you would act in accordance with the opposite trait, prudence in this case. Likewise, if you roll the exact value of the trait, because that's the best roll you can possibly make without failing, that's your critical success. So if you critically succeeded at your reckless roll, then you're going to act really recklessly. So that's basically it. We roll the D20 for skills, for traits, for passions, all of it. Passions come into play if you want to boost another value, a trait or skill value. So like if you had a hate passion against a person, you might roll and you're fighting them in combat, you might roll your hate passion first. If you succeed, you're going to get a nice little bonus to your sword skill or whatever you would like. And if you critically succeed, the bonus is even higher. Likewise, if you fumble your passion roll, then there's a chance you might fall into melancholy or even go mad, as knights in the Arthurian tales often do. The D6s only come into play when you're rolling damage. So if you hit that hated enemy, you would roll your damage statistic. Some weapons modify that by giving bonus dice to your pool. Also, if you critically succeed, you get to add 4 more dice to the pool. So sometimes you can be rolling kind of a double handful of dice for damage, which is tremendously satisfying. And you just total them up, and that's how much damage you do. You subtract the enemy's armor, and they take the difference in hit point damage. Obviously, there's some extra nuances there, determining knockdown, whether it's like a major wound, whether you're in danger of falling unconscious, and we'll cover all that if we have to,
right,
as it comes up. But that's basically it. The goal of Pendragon for you as knights is accruing glory. That is the most important thing for knights, is racking up glory points, because the higher your glory, the more renowned you are, the more respected you are, the more likely you are to get favors or have people flock to your banner, or earn favor with your lord or even the king. Actions accrue glory, defeating enemies in combat, obviously, but also maybe like a good speech in the Lord's Hall, or particularly deft use of a skill, for example, could accrue glory. Outside the scope of this scenario, but there's things like earning titles or land that would get you glory. So everything in the game ultimately revolves around accruing glory. And I will be tracking glory, even though this is just a short little scenario, because whoever has the most at the end, you win some bragging rights.
Excellent. No, I mean, for me, it's crystal clear as far as the rules are concerned. The application, once everything gets rolling, that's when we may have some questions and whatnot. So
absolutely, of course, yeah.
So yeah, forsooth.
Let's do this.
Forsooth, indeed. All right. All right. Well, so as I mentioned earlier, the year is 510. The land of Britain has stood on its own since the withdrawal of the Roman legions generations prior. It has been beset by invasions from the continent. The hated Saxons, originally invited here as mercenaries, are now having the audacity to actually put down roots and think they can stay. You are all native Britons, Cymric people, as you might call yourselves. And all of you, being rather young, have never known a land with a king. The last king of Britain, King Uther, died 15 years ago when you were all still children. So it is early in the year. It is the 9th day of January, to be precise. So the skies overhead are cold and gray, like lead, and they mirror the mood of the land. The last High King of Britain ruled even further back. That was Uther's brother, Aurelius Ambrosius. He died 30 years ago. And the High King rules all of Britain, not just the southern kingdom of Logres, which is where you find yourselves. More specifically, you are gathered in the old Roman town of Londinium. You've come to attend a grand tournament. This is the first of its kind. Nobody's ever heard of or attended a tournament before. But this has been called as perhaps a act of desperation by the ruling nobles of Logres, for they have decreed that whoever wins this tournament becomes the new High King of Britain. Yeah, could be you. Could happen to you.
Not him. I'm the only native Briton here.
That's true. You get some bonus points for that. All right. So Londinium is far and away the largest settlement in all of Britain. And as knights from elsewhere, this is your first time attending. And, well, most likely it is your first time at visiting, I should say, the city. And regardless of your familiarity, it is the most remarkable pit of filth and iniquity you have ever seen. Its lanes are claustrophobic. They seem to swim with garbage and offal. And the burghers and guildsmen of the city have little respect for you or your station. Fortunately for you all, you have your own tents, you have your own camps outside the city walls, so you're not obliged to stay inside the walls if you don't want to. I should also mention at this point that as knights, you all, or most of you, say I don't know who you're playing yet, so I'll keep it general, but most of you have a squire. So your squire, of course, is a knight in training. You all were once, or perhaps still are, squires yourselves. And so you are now taking on the mantle of mentorship to this eager young sidekick who is there to help you out. If you drop your weapon, they'll help you get a new one. If you need some bandaging on your wounds, they're there to do it. They're also great for, you know, fetching things that you might find yourselves in need of, and otherwise just kind of being a, you know, a handy dog's body. So just something to keep in mind, you know, you've kind of got your little NPC companion, and, you know, unless otherwise stated at all times. But yeah, so you are all exploring the city. You know, there's merchants and beggars, thieves mixing in amongst the common masses, both within the city and even in the sort of tent town outside the walls. You know, many knights have erected their tents from barons and dukes and counts and even petty kings down to the most lowly hedge knight. There are amusements, mostly for the peasants. And some knights and squires, though, enjoy viewing the bohort, which is a sort of controlled melee that's put on for squires and commoners, which, you know, knights can bet on. There's bear baiting, sadly, and other games on offer. But of course, most of the knights in attendance are focused on the big prize and getting ready for the tournament tomorrow. Now, as a tournament, this is again a new concept. It has been explained to you that this is a mock battle. You're going to fight it with blunted weapons to minimize casualties. Some think this is a good idea, others not so much. You know, this is, they're only participating because of the, you know, chance of winning the big prize. But, you know, quite a few knights think this is sort of not really what they should be doing. Knights are here to fight, not to pretend fight, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, you've been spending the day sightseeing. And so we will open in the courtyard of St. Paul's Cathedral. This is a massive Roman basilica. And in the courtyard where you are all standing is a remarkable sight, a sword driven into an iron anvil set atop a rock. The rock bears an inscription, but here's another little detail about life as a knight. There's a good chance that that all of you, not most of you, are illiterate. You can look at your character sheets. If you have any points in the literacy skill, that means you can read. But otherwise, you cannot.
I got a big, fat, whopping zero.
Mm-hmm. I will turn to someone standing next to me and say, sirs, can anyone here read what it says there?
It says that you smell like a horse's rear. And I give you a slap on the back.
Very funny, you sir.
I have no clue.
All right. Well, you might have heard some scuttlebutt. So what you all can do, we'll do our first unopposed roll, as it's called. You're going to take your D20, roll it against your intrigue skill. And again, you want to get equal to or less than your intrigue skill. All right. Roz, you rolled an 8. That's a good. All right. Anyone else?
I got a crit.
You got a crit. Okay.
So for listeners at home, my intrigue is a 7. I rolled a 7.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good. And Roz, you succeeded as well.
Yes. Mine is a 9.
A 9 and you rolled an 8. Oh, so close. So close. And let me get the names of your two characters. Roz, who are you playing?
Linnell.
Okay. And Keith?
I am playing Dame Tamura.
Dame Tamura. Yes, indeed. Okay, cool. All right. So both of you have heard, because the stone has been here for a while. You know, it's got moss and, you know, little creeper vines growing up the sides, and, you know, it looks like it could use some tending too, you know. So both of you have heard of this mysterious artifact. Apparently, like, it appeared at some point in the, you know, distant past, again, when you were younger. But yeah, it's something about this inscription on the stone that says something like, you know, whosoever pulls this sword becomes king of Britain, right? And so I'll say for Tamura, since you rolled a critical success, I would say that you have also personally heard of some folks who actually, you know, came to Londinium at some point in the past and tried their hand at it. They tried to pull that sword. And by all accounts, it is impossible. It seems like it's actually fused with the stone itself.
That's fair. Gotcha.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, don't let that stop any of you if you want to give it a shot.
Well, I mean, like,
I'm thinking of a number, and if you could roll that number on a D20, maybe you'll have a shot.
Dame Tamura is one to, you know, the proof is in the deeds, not in the words. So she will put her bravado before all else and everybody and their mother and attempt to pull the sword from the iron. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. Okay. So I am thinking of a number. I promise I'll be honest. If you roll this number, we'll completely derail the scenario and you'll become the new king of Britain. But yeah, go ahead and roll your D20. And let me know what you get.
Question is it actually on the 1 to 20 range?
I can't give away a clue that essential.
I rolled a 12.
Sadly, that is not the number.
Okay. Dame Tamura, she pulls and she pulls and she struggles. She grunts, and you can see the beads of sweat welling up on her forehead, and she's and before she like strains her back, she lessens her grip, and she steps back, knowing she's been bested like those she's heard about in the past.
Yes, indeed. Pookie obviously has a pretty good insight onto how Greg's brain worked. trickster that he was. all right. Keith, why don't you describe Dame Tamura as everyone's kind of staring at you, attempting to pull this sword?
So Dame Tamura is, she, like a lot of the others assembled around her and probably gawking at her, she's young, she's full of herself. Bravado is, you know, obviously what forced her to step up and attempt to pull the sword. She carries herself with confidence. She has like olived skin. She carries herself upright. God, what's the best way to describe her? I don't know. She exudes bravado, but she's a little bit on the reckless side, right? She's friendly. She's not unattractive, but not overly attractive. She's there, but she's there, but she's not there, if that makes sense. As a person, she blends into a crowd, but when she needs to stand out, she stands out. When she needs to blend in, she can blend in, but damn, when she stands out, she really stands out. That's her reckless nature. She goes a little over the top, as we just saw. Mm-hmm. You know, and that is who she is. There's more to her story, but that would have to come out kind of in a bigger story.
Yes, it's almost like you all have complex backstories. So Roz, how about Linnell?
Linnell, she has golden blonde hair and sparkling eyes. However, if you looked behind those eyes, you'd probably see maybe a little hint of fire, not in a good way. And unlike Tamora, Linnell does not want to stand out or be seen. Linnell prefers to stand back and watch. Linnell is on a mission.
All right. And who is Pookie playing?
I am playing Cadwallon.
Oh, nice.
a barrel-chested young man with a rustic accent, which I can do almost native since I'm from that region.
Nice.
Wow, he's cheating. No, I'm just kidding.
I know, right? Authenticity.
Yes, and he will look round. He will stride forth and say, "Nothing gained, nothing ventured." So he'll push his way through the crowd and attempt to pull the sword from the... from the anvil.
Okay. I mean, roll that d20.
Good luck, tough guy, as Tamora walks past him back into the crowd. And then when she steps back into the crowd, she'll kind of turn to watch the spectacle that she knows it's going to be.
He'll approach, right. lay down his spear, and then stretch a little, reach for the sword, and pull.
All right. And what did we roll?
16.
Oh, sadly, that wasn't it either. And lastly, mm-hmm. Scott, who are you playing? I think I have an idea, but...
I am playing...
There is no Sir Whoops Too Far.
Sir Whoops Too Far. Sir Evrain, I believe is that how you pronounce it? Mm-hmm. And he is, he's young. He's a 24-year-old young man, mm-hmm. broad shoulders, strong. He's leaning against his one of his spears, watching everyone, fatigue themselves out, pulling and straining their muscles against the sword, knowing full well that they're not going to be able to pull it out. And he won't bother. He just chuckles to himself, knowing that, why would I strain myself on something as pointless as this when there is glory to be had at something real? And that's the tournament. And he just kind of, he's got a, a kind smile, bright eyes. But he has a bit of a romantic streak. He likes to, battle with his sword. And he likes to catch the, kind eye of the lady doing so. So glory is not something to be attained just for him, but also to be known amongst the fellow women in the pageantry around him. But he tends to carry a bit of has a bit of an ego amongst him. And would probably assume that someone like that, who tends to feel himself to be a bit more seductive in a ladies' man, tends to find out soon enough that things don't always go as planned. So we shall see what the fates have for Sir Evrain.
And so one last thing then, as we're introducing these characters, is looking at your traits. Any trait that is a 16... is what is known as a notable trait. This is something that, for those who may know you at least, you are known for. So for example, with Evrain, being that romantic, like Scott described. Yes, indeed, he has a notably lustful side to him, a 16, in fact.
Oh, wow. That's quite a different term than romantic.
Well, there's different versions of romance.
Right, yes. Yes. Fair enough. Yes.
But when it comes to traits that are at a 16, the important thing to know about those is that with the other traits, you can, it's always your option to roll against a trait. Like, oh, am I going to be merciful or cruel in this situation? Let me roll. And you can decide which one you want to roll first. So you might want to roll merciful first on the hopes that you'd succeed and be merciful. But with a notable trait, first of all, you might be forced to roll against that trait, or obligated, maybe would be the better word. And you always have to roll that trait first. So if it's an if it's opposing traits, right? So like in the case of lustful, if Sir Ivrain was perhaps being tempted to, you know, follow a lady down a darkened alley, you know, which is clearly not a great idea in Londinium, you would need to roll against your lustful, and obviously there's a very good chance you'll succeed, and if that's the case, then off you go. And only if you fail can you then attempt chaste, and succeed or fail, you can then decide what you want to do and act accordingly. So
right,
anyway, that's how notable traits work. So you know, obviously I can't track everybody's notable traits, so mainly as a player in Pendragon, you know, it's sort of your responsibility to know which ones are 16s, and just let me know if a situation comes up that you feel like that might apply. You know, just let me know.
Ducky, I got three of them.
Wow. I do have
a question though. There are others on here, like generous, honest. Are these just bold print noting that they are the higher value between the two traits?
Bold print traits. So yes, these are, now since you're using the sheets from the starter set, you know, this would have been explained in the starter set, but these are the traits that are important to you based on your religion, based on your belief system. So, and that varies based on whether you're Christian, pagan, something else. But right. Like, for example, pagan knights value lustful, whereas Christian knights value chaste, for example.
Oh, okay. Excellent.
Let's see. That's everybody. All right. Great. So the four of you are the only knights in the courtyard. There is a small crowd, as there usually is, but it's you know, just commoners and other folk beneath your notice. You know.
Technically, Colin is a squire.
Aha, that is true. Are you open about that? Are you trying to pass yourself off as a knight?
He's not hiding the fact that he's a squire, but he's not making a big deal about it.
You know, you have the afternoon. You can do what you like. You can, you know, go sightseeing or just go back to your tent and, you know, focus on the tournament tomorrow, whatever you would like to do. So yes, please talk amongst yourselves.
Well, I think I will. I mean, if everyone's keeping together, I will pony up to them, you know, and kind of, you know, congratulate them on their valiant effort of trying to pull the sword from the stone. But even though it was, you know, fruitless, maybe we should go grab something to drink to celebrate, maybe a little ounce of liquid courage before the tournaments begin. What say you?
But now we'll decline.
Okay.
Libations?
Yeah.
I mean, before evening meal? I mean, I'm not opposed.
It's, you know, something to make the sights before us kind of haze out a little bit, as horrible as they may be. And, you know, maybe the ale here smells better than the stench coming from the streets of Londinium.
It is much better in that out in the country than being here, I would say.
I think anywhere is better than being here, but I think we are on the cusp of, this is a time of change. Something is going to happen and we are going to have a front row seat and I am ready for it. But you know what? Before anything happens, I think it's time for that libation.
Yes. And then let's go. Libations await.
Your ladyship, will you not be joining us? Surely it's you will only you only need to join this, join in moderation.
Are you, who are you speaking to?
You.
I am not your ladyship. Actually, how well do we know each other?
We don't.
Then you would not know that I am not a lady.
Well, no, exactly. I'm presuming.
Not a female. So that's excellent. You would not see a female.
Oh, okay. Your gotcha. Lordship, will you not be joining us, even if only moderate?
No, and it puzzles me why you would want to dull your senses before a tournament.
I mean, it's what everyone does. All the cool kids are doing it. So, I mean, let's, I mean, you know, sir, win in Londinium, as they may start saying. So, but I mean, but don't let us pressure you. Obviously, you
just
may have
one small
good
beer
into.
Won't dull the senses.
Well, I choose not to imbibe. Thank you.
Oh,
and that is absolutely your choice. Would you care to at least join us and share the table with us?
I will agree to do that.
All right. Wonderful. Zah. That'll be the last time I say that. That's a lie. All right. Yes. So yes, let's find some place that serves drink.
So if this were a more conventional like campaign game, I would then tell Roz to check Linnell's temperate trait, meaning put a little check in the checkbox there, because Roz is playing Linnell exactly, you know, appropriate to their traits. And so you know, you can check something when you critically succeed. So actually, Keith, for Tamura, you critically succeeded at your intrigue, so you would have checked that. Mm-hmm. You know, or so it can be from a die roll, or it could just be the game master just says, hey, check your temperate, because that was great. You know.
Got it. Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it's also a nice little clutch, because if somebody is just really insistent on being an asshole or something, you'd be like, oh, go ahead and check your proud and your reckless while you're at it, you know. And then, you know, if they're fine with that, that's great. It's just they'll see over time their knight becomes more proud and more reckless, you know. So the right. character changes according to how you play it.
I've basically. Got enough proud and reckless. I don't need it to get any higher.
You're right. Right.
Woo.
Okay. So all right, so very good. So you're all going to find a little public house, little ale house, and some of you will imbibe and some of you will not. So, yes.
I will only touch the small beer.
Of course.
It is the safest thing to drink.
That is true. Yes, the last thing you want is food poisoning on the night before the tournament. All right, so... very good. So as you make your way through the crowded streets, who has the highest spiritual trait amongst you?
That's probably going to be Dame Tamura. I've got a 16.
Okay. All right. So, you know, as usual, you're kind of having to shoulder your way through these packed streets, you know, try to keep mud from splashing onto your tunics and whatnot. But Tamura, you... briefly lock eyes with a strange figure moving through the crowd. He's a aged, haggard looking man in flowing, tattered robes. He's got a kind of crazed twinkle in his eye. You kind of know almost instinctually that this must be the legendary magician Merlin, but what he may be doing here is anybody's guess.
Right.
So Merlin has many different reputations. He is both admired and reviled. So we can see what Tamura thinks of him with a roll against what we would say trusting/suspicious roll. My goodness, that was a tongue twister. So you would roll against your trusting and suspicious traits. Now, because Merlin has more of a bad reputation than a good one, we're going to apply what's called a reflexive modifier. So there's a -5 on your trusting and a +5 on your suspicious. Does the +5 on your suspicious raise it to 16 or higher?
It does not, because I've got 10s.
Right. So when it comes to Merlin, effectively, your trusting is a 5 and your suspicious is a 15. So because neither one of those is 16 or higher with the modifier, you can choose which one of those traits to roll first.
I'm going to attempt to roll trusting based on what backstory stuff, why I'm in Londinium. With the reflexive modifier at putting me at 5, I rolled a 19.
Okay. So now you would roll suspicious. Yep. Yeah.
So, which that is with the modifier is at a 15, and I rolled a 6. So I am suspicious.
Okay. You are sus. Okay. Basically, what you've heard about this guy, possibly, I mean, this makes a bit of sense, knowing where you're from, is that, you know, he's the literal spawn of the devil. And it was through his meddling that King Uther met his doom.
As I catch sight of him, I will nudge, as we're walking through the streets, I will nudge whoever is to my left. I don't know which one of you it is. Probably Linnell, I would imagine. Hey, you see that figure over there with the tattered robes and the long scraggly hair?
What of him?
I think that's Merlin.
And
you do know who Merlin is, don't you?
Enlighten me.
Well, rumors have it that Merlin is the spawn of the devil. He is devil incarnate. And she starts getting kind of impassioned about it. And her volume rises, probably louder than it needs to be. You know, there's rumor that he is somehow directly involved, or the cause of Uther's death. I don't know if this bodes well for the tournament or for anything. That is the only Merlin. And then I kind of quicken my pace.
Well,
and kind of veer. So if Merlin's over here, I kind of veer off a little bit this way.
Right.
Do you think that it's wise to spread rumors about one you deem to be as powerful as that to bring down a king?
Where I'm from, they're not necessarily rumors. They are belief and statements of fact.
Well, look around you, not where you are from.
Well, I bring my beliefs of my home with me. So I guess that is the beauty of Londinium or any other large trading city. You know, there are many from many areas, you know, people from many areas with different beliefs and various cultures, all mixing together.
Well, believe as you choose and speak as you feel.
And I keep glancing over my shoulder, trying to keep an eye on where whatever Merlin's doing or where he's walking.
If he's doing the little eye signal.
Yeah, yeah. Is he is he looking at me? What's he doing?
I'm curious, Roz, what Linnell might have heard about Merlin. Now you have a even score on trusting and suspicious as well. So yeah. So why don't we just roll trusting? Because if you succeed on that, you might have heard something else other than what Tamura's saying.
I rolled an 18.
No, okay. Yep. All right.
As well, you know, Linnell's not very forthcoming anyway.
Yes, very true. Very true. All right. So you've caught sight of, you know, a likely looking establishment. You know, the board outside, maybe appropriately enough, depicts a cat wearing a crown. So perhaps this bodes well for anyone with royal ambitions, you know. But for Evrain, you are distracted for a moment by the sight of a particular lady, a noblewoman. She is immediately visible to everybody because she is one of the few people who is actually mounting a horse here in the crowded streets. Her path is being cleared by some, you know, sergeants at arms or squires, perhaps, who are, you know, leading the horse through the gap that they're creating. But she sits regally unperturbed, as she no doubt is returning to her primary residence at the White Tower, the old Roman castle on the banks of the Thames. And it is none other than Lady Mercedes of the White Tower.
My love. Oh, yes. And I just kind of say to myself under my breath that she is my passion. She is why I am here. As much as it would be a beyond honor to become the king of the Britons, but just to have a moment with Lady Mercedes would go beyond any great deed that I can imagine. So I am here to, you know, prove to her that I am worthy of her. And then I look around at my companions and realize that I wasn't saying that with my inside voice. I was saying out loud.
Well, so we all have missions.
Yes. So yeah, that's considering my background, that is definitely a sight to behold.
Yeah, for once you're not being a snarky puss.
No, I am well, not rot speechless, but I've obviously said things that I care not to say out loud. But yes, I will button it from that point on. But where's she? She's heading to the tower. She is a resident of Londinium.
She is indeed, yes.
Okay. Yes. If she's departing, I you know, just kind of make note that she's heading that way. And I think I may have to follow her.
You're gonna veer off?
I'm gonna try to fight it.
All right.
I don't think I can, because so one, I have a passion, I have an adoration for her of 10, but I also have lustful 16. So
right. Yes. Yeah. Now, of course, the adoration is more about putting her up on a pedestal, really.
Right.
You know, like, okay. She's not like other women, you know, yeah, like that kind
She's not like the others. Okay.
She's not like the others, exactly.
So I don't want to follow her, but I
do. But you might, yeah.
Yeah. So what
We could do there is we could oppose a trait against a passion. So this represents inner conflict, right? So I'd say in this case it might be prudent for you not to like just go plunging off into the streets of a strange metropolis that you don't know anything about. So you would oppose your prudent versus your adoration. Both of those are fairly low values. So in the case that you don't succeed at either, it'll be up to you as the player. But you can choose which one to roll first.
Prudent. Mm-hmm. So that is an 18. So
you guys are rolling high today.
No, yeah, I gotta blow off that D20 that we've been using them for. So that means that I fall into the reckless aspect. Is that correct?
No, in this case you would roll against adoration.
Oh, roll against adoration. Okay. 17.
All right, so you failed at both. So right. Yeah, so I know, right? So it really is ultimately you are not compelled to follow her, mm-hmm. but if you choose to, I would award you a check in reckless for doing so. But yeah, it's really up to you.
I think I will shake it off because I want to keep focus on on my companions here, and just kind of want to. I know that she will be watching me at the tournament, so that is enough for me for now. But, certainly. As she turns the corner, you kind of see me slump my broad shoulders slightly.
Okay. All right. And so at last we arrive at the inn. It's the longest 3-block walk in the history of Londinium. But there's so much to see is the thing. There's always something going on. So you are pushing your way into the Cat and Crown Tavern, or alehouse, I want to call it a tavern. It is, of course, packed with visitors, knights, squires, hangers-on, you know, and so forth. And so you're, you know, kind of having to push your way through the crowd to find, you know, good spot to have a seat. And all of a sudden, there's a great commotion. You all turn behind you. A youth is scrabbling with an old beggar. They're actually kind of jostling against a couple of you, you know, and then, you know, the beggar, like a little polecat, you know, escapes from the grip of the youth, who is clearly, you know, noble in his dress, and runs out the door. A knight about your age, who had been standing up near the ale barrels waiting for his turn to fill his tankard, in the presence of an older, you know, backcountry knight, presumably his father or some other relation. This young knight strides over, you know, he says, "Hey, what's the meaning of all this? You're disturbing these gentle folk." And he gives the youth this little cup on the ear. And then he turns to the four of you and he says, "My apologies for my squire. He's never been to a big city before and has obviously grown overexcited." So, anybody notably forgiving or vengeful?
Oh, much vengeful.
Hey, Roz.
Vengeance. I'm even keel. Yeah.
16, baby.
All right. Let's give Linnell a roll against vengeful and see how she feels about this kid bumping into her, sending her on her back foot.
It's a 19. Dang.
Ooh, all right. Go ahead and roll forgiving. Let's just see.
That's a 14.
Okay. So much like with Ivrain, if you fail both, then you kind of have free reign to act as you wish.
Give him, I think, just a dirty look.
Yeah. Excellent. So he... go ahead.
That is all right, sir. We all have to learn somewhere.
Nice. Yes. So the youth kind of looks up at all of you, and he obviously feels abashed that got out of control. But he says, "Please, Kay, I was just trying to prevent that thief from cutting the knight's coin purse." And he points at Sir Ivrain, actually. And you look down, and sure enough, your coin purse is hanging off your belt by a single loop. He had almost managed to cut through both loops before this kid intervened.
Oh, well, considering that circumstances, Sir Kay, it seems here the lad was doing me a favor and didn't warrant your lashing. But I do not want to intrude more than what is necessary, but here you go. And I take out a few of my, is it Demiri?
Denari, yep.
Denari, sorry. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Denari. And I'll give him, you know, three or four coins and,
ooh,
you know, cup it in his hands and thank him and say, you know, there's people such as yourselves who take it upon them to stop those stealing things they do not deserve. Is a worthy trait. You will definitely make a good knight someday.
So he grins up at you as the silver pennies fall into his hand, you know, and he looks down at them and he says, "My, I don't think I've ever seen so much wealth." And Kay says, yes, well done, Arthur. Come, we must unload the baggage."
I'm just going to go outside and say, sorry, I've got a spare sword here. You might need it later."
Yeah, right. Hey, now there's only one knight of two swords, and he's not in the story yet.
And then to celebrate, I'm trying to see if I'm following along directly. He has a very generous trait of 15, so he will, you know, he will buy a round of drinks for everyone.
Very nice. Yes. Well, check, you're generous indeed.
Okay.
Well, since Ivrain is clearly, you know, in the mood to get everyone well lubricated. Those of you who are drinking, go ahead and make a temperate indulgence roll to see if you perhaps overindulge. We've established that Linnell is abstaining, so no need for Linnell to roll.
I'm going to roll against temperate first, since I said I was only going to do one small beer, but we'll see.
That's right. You never know. If someone else is buying, you know.
So my temperate is a 10. I rolled a 9.
Nice. Okay. So you stick with your intent.
My plan. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Likewise, I've also rolled a 9 and my temperance is 13.
Brilliant.
I rolled against my temperate, and I rolled a 3. So I am just enjoying the happiness of others.
I was waiting for you to get schnockered.
First time in history that a bunch of 21-year-old jocks go into a bar and don't get shit faced, I guess.
Right.
So. I mean, I almost feel like I got to do would have to go against indulgence, but I went with temperate because, you know.
Yeah.
I only did because I said I was going to drink one small beer.
Yeah. Hey, you could have always fumbled that temperate, and then we would have had some fun. Yeah.
Oh my god.
All right. So you all settle in. There's a nice little fire going in a little central fire pit, you know, smoke collecting up around the rafters. It's very convivial, you know, and on a January day, it's, you know, a great place to be. I guess the question is, do any of you intend to do any sightseeing after this, or are you just going to head back to camp, basically, in a manner of speaking?
Dame Tamora is going to, she will take advantage of being in Londinium before the sun sets, because it's obviously going to set early in the evening. Mm-hmm. She's going to kind of take in maybe a few sights on the way back to camp. You know, she'll take a circuitous route back. She doesn't know when she may ever get back to Londinium when she leaves.
Sure. All right.
And Cadwallon would like to go and pray for his prior to the tournament tomorrow.
How very spiritual of you. All right. Anybody else?
I think Evrain will go with Lady Tamora because he's running the game in a few days and he needs to see how this plays out. So,
how practical of him.
Yes.
And at the same time, I'm listening in to find out for when I write the review of this quick start.
Yes.
So, but yes, I definitely want to go see, you know, at least a site or two. I mean, on top of that, just, you know, a little quick side note here at sidebar, the wonderful map of Londinium that comes with the starter set. I did pull the image file and I'm having it printed out in
wonderful.
A larger format at Staples. So I tend to use that. So yes, sightseeing.
Yes. Well, actually, I was just about to screen share that very map.
Oh, excellent.
Yes.
Yay.
Yes, yes. Yeah, it's definitely if you're running this, listeners, and you can manage it, then it can be handy to make a little handout for the players, or a big one, apparently. All right. So there we are. And as you can see, just how utterly massive Londinium is. And so you are all encamped to the west of the city, along the River Fleet, between Watling Street and Fleet Street. And so this is where the tournament grounds have been demarcated. This is where your tents have been erected. You can see the old Roman walls standing, and just for Evrain's reference, the white tower is the one marked P on the map.
Okay.
And of course, you had all visited St. Paul's, G on the map. And you're somewhere in that vicinity. Sorry, Roz, did you say what Linnell's doing?
Linnell is going to go back to camp, find Booth, and tend to my weapons.
Perfect. All right. And then we've got Tamura heading off on her own, it sounds like. So that's always exciting. And then Evrain and Cadwallon sort of sightseeing together.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. So I will go ahead and roll. Like all GMs, I have a sadistic side and I enjoy seeing what kind of trouble you get into. I'll say that just as a warning, I actually do, this is documented, I do have a weird sort of curse laid upon me that if I'm ever rolling on a random city event table and there's any chance of someone getting a chamber pot emptied onto their head, I tend to roll that. So just consider yourselves fairly warned. It's happened far more often than you would think, but
David, I think I would suggest. I think I speak for all of us. That's what we're here for.
Yeah, I'm here for the chamber pot.
So I reckon you've just got one table with six entries, all labeled
chamber pot. Yeah, exactly. It's like this pulling the sword out of the anvil. all right, so let's roll for Evrain and Cadwallon first. Okay. Oh no! Well, this isn't the chamber pot, but I did kind of weirdly call this earlier. You know, you take in the sights. It's a you know, it's quite overwhelming, and you know the beer isn't sitting too well. So as you approach Ludgate, you know, there's the street vendors with their little market stalls, and there's some guy, you know, hawking, you know, rat on a stick, essentially, right? You know, mystery meat. And, you know, you give in against your better judgment. You both treat yourselves to some greasy street food, and it goes about as well as you might expect. So, unfortunately, tomorrow you will both have a penalty to your constitution for this tournament. okay, so for
you got bubble gut.
you're going to be at a -3 to your constitution. And for Cadwallon, just a -1. It sat a little better for you.
Blub, 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 blub.
You know, you might want to stand upwind for me tomorrow. This is not sitting well.
It's good that your tent is within walking distance of the River Fleet. That's all I'm saying.
Punch those cheeks tight.
So just so you know, your constitution helps determine your hit points. So this also would reduce your hit points accordingly. All right. And for Tamura, let's see what we got for Tamura lined up here. Uh-huh. Okay. So you're taking this sort of circuitous route and, you know, you find yourself kind of out in the some of the less built over parts of the city, out near Aldersgate on the north end of town. And there's a lot of like kind of larger, like there's some tanneries here and just like kind of, you know, it's the industrial part of town, if you will. And, you know, as often happens, there's some dogs off leash out of their enclosure and they catch sight of you and just take off after you. And, and so you do manage to escape unharmed, but unfortunately your fine tunic, you know, your best tunic that you brought with you to Londinium gets ripped up a bit at the hems. And so this is actually reducing your appeal by 2 points until such time as you can acquire new threads, traditionally is only handed out by your lord at Yuletide. So you got a whole year to wait.
Basically. Yeah, I do.
This will not stand. I mean, I have to look my best for Lady Mercada's.
Good thing it's me and not you.
Yeah, I was going to say. Wait a minute.
I thought it's you. I thought it was both of us.
No, it's me. It's Lady Tamura.
Oh, excellent. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you should get that fixed. It looks horrid.
Yeah.
So thus you can avoid being a bit rough.
So yeah, in case you're wondering, there is a very generous 35% chance that you'll get a good outcome from that table, and everything else is
crap.
Punishing. Yep.
I love it.
Yeah, knights and big cities don't get along. That's why Arthur's just like, screw it, I'm gonna build my own city. And it'll be a lot nicer. All right, so So yeah, so eventually, in one way or another, you all make your way back to your tents and prepare for the next day. All right. So as I mentioned, the tournament field has been staked out between Newgate and Ludgate, with Watling Street and Fleet Street marking the northern and southern boundaries. So in the morning, as the sun is coming up and chasing away the freezing morning fog, you are all assembling sort of on the edge of the pitch, as it were. You have those of you with squires have your squires. You've got your best horse. You know, you're ready to go. You're fully armored. That's another thing with Pendragon, actually, is like if you were to play through the campaign timeline, the technology and the fashions and everything else sort of advances, in an appropriate ratio. So it's kind of like the Middle Ages on fast forward. So since this is, you know, obviously at the beginning of Arthur's time, it's kind of equivalent to like the late 12th century. So your tunics are long, well tailored, cut at the shoulders. Fashion for men is short hair, clean shaven. Women tend to wear their hair very long and in very long braids. Or else, you know, like the headgear, headpieces, hats, etc., are not like super elaborate. There are wimples, you know, for the matrons and the nuns and so forth. But for the women right now, it's all about the braid and then kind of a little, girdle or you know, sort of midsection piece to kind of provide some support, and then just a nice long flowing dress.
As armored knights, we've not reached the crone period.
That's correct. So we're not yet in John Borman's Excalibur era.
no sparkles. I mean, that's no shining. It's
Your helmets certainly shine. So right now you're wearing mail armor. It's sufficiently protective. You've got, of course, your hauberk to protect your torso and upper limbs. And then, you know, there's sort of variations on that armor, like some has more mail than others, you know. Helmets tend to be open-faced or with a cross guard. Some helmets do have like kind of a face piece, but that's sort of a new thing. And usually you only see that with the rich knights. And your shields are kite shields. So these are big, bulky, teardrop-shaped shields that are really at their best when you're charging with a lance. And any other activity that you're doing from horseback is going to be very awkward. So kite shields are easiest to wield on foot, actually, ironically enough. And over time, of course, shields get smaller so that they get less in your way when you're actually doing what you're supposed to do as a knight. But for right now, that's just the burden you have to carry as knights. So
this too, we shall overcome.
Yes, indeed. Heraldry also at this time is sort of in its infancy. There's no college of heralds or anything. It's not official. It's just basically, hey, I came up with this cool design and I painted it on my shield, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, you know, the heraldry on your character sheets is basically like essentially what you know, you decided on as, you know, being something that you would want to represent. Some, you know, knights are handing off their heraldry to their heirs, you know, to carry on. And of course, obviously that will become more common over time, but at this time it's still relatively informal and relatively simple. There's not a lot of like quartered arms and that kind of thing. You know, you are on the tournament grounds, and so basically this is a tournament melee, which means that it is run much like a battle. In the starter set, this basically functions as a tutorial for the battle system, which, you know, spoiler alert, does show up later, you know, in the campaign. So this kind of sets that up. But for now, you know, it'll give us a chance to take the combat rules for a little spin, have a little bit of fun with that in a relatively safe environment. But yes, yeah, so upon showing up, you see that there are various like tournament marshals and officials, and they're sort of like dividing people out into teams, you know, and there's the red team and the blue team. And so, you know, the four of you are sort of, you know, all pushed in one direction. You end up on the blue team. So you're all handed a blue sash that you can tie around your arm so that people can see easily which team you're on. As you're all doing that and just kind of going over your final checks and whatnot, you can all make awareness rolls.
Failed.
Okay. Roz failed. So who all succeeded?
I did.
I failed too.
Okay.
Yeah, I passed with a 4.
With a 4. And how did Cadwallon do?
I failed.
Oh, failed. Okay. Wow. All right. So just the 1. So so yeah, Tamura, you're briefly distracted by some shouting nearby. The knight, and you recognize it's that knight that you met the day before in the alehouse, Sir Kay. And he's once again yelling at his squire something about a sword.
I just kind of chuckle.
He did offer.
I just kind of chuckle. Yeah. And all I can think is, God, this poor kid. I mean, I remember being a squire and being chastised by my knight. So, and then I look to my squire at the same time and just shake my head. Yeah.
Yeah, like you better remembered that.
Yeah.
Okay. So so battles are fought in turns. A turn represents about an hour of fighting, but we sort of break that down to what we call an encounter, which just represents kind of the most consequential part of that hour. Okay. You're gonna all ride together in the same unit. It's called a conroy. And this is, you know, usually 5 to 15 knights plus squires. And you have actually ended up in the conroy due to Evrain's status as a mercenary knight in the employ of King Leodegrance of the Kingdom of Cameliard. You have ended up in King Leodegrance's conroy.
Excellent. There's no better place to be.
Yes, indeed. So we track something called morale, and that basically just represents your conroy's collective, interest and capacity to continue fighting. And it's essentially, you know, we abstract it out by just asking each one of you, what passion are you really fighting for? Like what has brought you here? You know, and that... that can include honor, of course, but you could be doing it for the love of your family or your, you know, fealty, your adoration, your devotion, what have you.
Dame Tamura is doing it for the passion of her homage to Lady Vivian.
Okay. And what's the value of that passion?
15.
15.
Yeah. Because that is what brought her here.
Right. Okay. How about Evrain?
Upon seeing Lady Mercatus, mm-hmm. His current reason for being, reason for the season is his adoration for her. He is there to prove to her that he is worth her adoration.
Hey, excellent. And that's a 10, I believe, right?
Yeah, it is a 10.
All right. How about Cadwallon?
Would be his family, which is a 15.
Nice. And Linnell?
Linnell is vacillating between honor and station. And station just for feeling that loss of her former life. Mm-hmm. And again, knowing what mission she's on.
Okay. And what's your station value?
It's 15. And 15, my honor's 15 as well.
Oh, okay. All right. So basically, we take the average of those and... I do some quick math here with the, let's see, carry the 1, et cetera. Okay, yeah, wow. All right, so that comes out to 11. So your morale is 11. So that gives you an idea. It's on a 1 to 20 scale. It just kind of gives you an idea, at the very least, of like kind of how pumped up you guys are, you know. So you're moderately pumped. All right. Insider tip, if you had all selected the same passion, you would have got added +5 to that score.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, but your morale also determines like who you're able to engage on the field. You know, there's minimum morale scores for certain encounters. You lose morale when you fight in encounters, and then you gain it back with, you know, victories on the field and so forth.
Okay.
All right. So, like I say, there are encounters, then there are opportunities. And these are like those sort of lightning strikes moments on the battlefield where suddenly, you know, you see, you know, the combatant's part and, oh, there's the king, the enemy king. We can go after him, or, oh, we can go right off and raid the baggage train or what have you, you know. So for the purposes of this tournament, there's going to be two possible encounters and one possible opportunity. So I would just ask everyone to roll their battle skill. And all I need to know is whether you succeed or critically succeed. Failures or fumbles don't penalize in any way.
Okay.
Fail.
Battle skill.
Ooh.
Combat skills.
Amora succeeds.
Okay.
Yeah, so does Kettle.
So I do have a question. Is the battle skill so low just because of our age?
Yes.
Okay. So my battle skill is 5 and I rolled a 20.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, good time to fumble when there's no,
when there's no consequence for it.
Oh, thank God. Okay.
Mine's an 8 and I rolled a 6, so.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Mine's 5 and I rolled a 4.
Okay. All right. So as you, ride out onto the field to the fanfare of trumpets, you line up your horses, King Leodegrance, obviously in the center, you're sort of watching him for the signal, and you can see across the field is another convoy of knights. These are knights of the north. They've come all this way down from the northern kingdoms. Obviously their ambition driving them on. Perhaps one of them will become High King. And so the default encounter that I am setting is with knights from the Kingdom of Gore. That's sounds very intimidating, but it's spelled G-O-R-R-E. And these are knights, they look like worthy opponents, stern men. But their armor is a bit out of date, Perhaps there are more glorious opponents to find. So those of you who succeeded at your battle rolls, would you like to try and change that encounter? Perhaps fight someone worthier?
I would.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So we had a 6. And Pookie, what did you roll?
I rolled a 4.
A 4. Okay. So I'm going to roll against the battle's intensity. And for Tamura, I beat your roll, and for Cadwallon, I beat yours as well. So, in that case, the encounter stays the same. You'll be fighting these Knights of Gore, and then obviously, if someone had critically succeeded, that would have activated the opportunity card. So, but since that didn't happen, we'll be going with the default encounter, Knights of Gore. All right, so you're all lined up. You've got your lances in hand, your shields are seated, your chargers are stamping the ground and whinnying with anticipation. Adrenaline is pumping, even though you're charging. The lances all just have blunted tips, chances of getting impaled much reduced. But nevertheless, this is what you do as knights. This is why you're here. So, so before we make this charge, which as the skill name indicates, it uses the charge skill. Would anyone care to impassion the charge skill with a passion?
Yes.
Okay. So for Cadwallon, now the, never mind about the morale score. That was just to, you don't have to, you don't have to use that passion necessarily, but you do have to justify why you would be rolling against the passion you wish to roll against.
I'm doing it. I'm going to keep with family, which is 15,
yep.
Because I am ambitious in my father's name and in my family name. wanting to prove myself on the tournament to acquire the status of knighthood.
I like it. So, Scott, that's, you know, when you're running this, it's really kind of up to you, you know, like how much of a hard ass you want to be or, you know, or not. And it's really there just to kind of prevent, you know, it's like some players will try and just wheedle anything out that they can. You know, like, well, I want to roll against my hospitality because I like home. Or, you know, or like,
so. Yeah. keep it's, an even ground and keep it on theme. Yeah.
Yeah, eggs keep it on theme, exactly. Yeah. And I like Pookie's justification, so sounds good to me. Go ahead and roll against your love family.
Oh, this is going to go bad. I rolled a 19.
Oh, 19. Not a fail. Okay. All right. You're okay. So unlike in earlier editions of Pendragon, if you fail your passion roll, there's no penalty. So... that's fine. It's a fumble, of course. That's a whole different story. So there is always a little bit of a risk when you try to make a passion roll. How about anybody else?
I think of Rain. He wants to use hospitality. No, I'm kidding. he's representing King Liodegrance? Okay. And you know, he has a passion of a fealty. So would it be on themes to not want to embarrass himself in front of his
Very much so. Yeah. I mean, you're the person that you've sworn yourself to for this year is present. Obviously you want to make a good impression. Yeah.
5. And my fealty is
nice. Okay. All right. So you will have a +5 to your charge skill for this encounter.
Excellent. Okay, cool.
Roz, did you want to do it?
You say they look kind of red, ragtag. Uh-huh. I think Linnell would feel just horrible and disgrace. So I might try honor. I would hate to lose to these people.
I love that. That's perfect.
Okay. I have a 15 and I rolled a 10.
All right. So you will also have a +5 to your charge.
I was going to impassion my honor as well, just in a similar vein. With having traits, a proud at 16 and a valorous at 16, I cannot lose to a ragtag, scraggly group of unworthy opponents. So
yeah, they're from beyond the wall, like Kingdom of Gore. That's north of the wall. So
yeah. So yeah, I was kind of in the same vein as Linnell. That's where I was headed. So
okay,
yeah. And I failed. I rolled a mine's a 15. I rolled a 17. So
okay, no problem. All right. So a couple of you fired up, and the rest of you are merely toasty. So, all right. So you begin to spur your horses forward, initially into a trot, and then a canter, and then a gallop as your lances come down and your shields come up and your opponents are hurtling towards you, and the great crash of the charge as it meets, and we will find out what happens here. So the way combat works is... an opposed role, but instead of earlier where you'd be opposing against yourself, now you're opposing against me. So I'm like the guy in the dunking chair. See if you can dunk me. All right. So, all right. So I'll just, let's see. I'll just go in order of the windows here on my Zoom. So we'll start with Tamura. So Tamura, go ahead and roll against your charge.
All right. My value is a 12. And I rolled a 6.
All right. So in an opposed roll, we look at who succeeds, but we also look at what you roll, right? Because again, the higher you can get without going over is always preferable. So okay. You rolled a 6, which is a success. However, I rolled a 10, which is also a success, and beats your 6.
Yep.
So let's see here. We are rolling... charge damage. Now, the way it works with a rebated lance is I'm going to roll the full damage, but that's only going to apply to the knockdown. And then we have the damage after that to see if any of it actually gets through your armor. So a charger does 6d6 damage. And so we tally that up really quickly. And that comes out to 22. What is Tamura's size, please?
Tamura's size is 14.
Okay, so it is higher than her size, but not twice her size. So there is a potential for a knockdown here. So what you're going to do is roll against your dexterity.
Okay, my dexterity is 12. I rolled an 18.
Oh, all right. So down goes Tamura.
I am going ass over tea kettle.
That's right. All right. And so the bruising from your fall costs you 3 hit points.
Ouch.
All right. So next up is Linnell.
Am I rolling at a minus? Is this at a minus 2?
No. So good question. So when you are charging, when you're using your charge skill, that's the only time that your kite shield does not impede you.
Okay.
Yeah.
So with the plus 5, my charge value is 15. So we should do crappy. Great. 8.
Oh, same here. As for tomorrow, I rolled a 13, which succeeds and beats your 8. All right. Well, let's see if Linnell has better luck. I'm seeing fewer 6s, so we're off to a good start. 5, that's 13, 16, 19. Obviously, that's more than her size, but I doubt that's more than twice her size.
Almost.
Almost? Okay.
Size that's 10. True. Size
she
10.
She is petite. She is petite. Oh, wow. Okay, roll your dexterity, please.
That's a 12, and I rolled an 8.
Okay, great. So in spite of her small frame, Linnell manages to keep her seat in the saddle.
Oh, I got a new seat. Right. It just happens to be in the mud.
Oh, and by the way, I just realized I was doing the armor math in my head, not really telling you all what I was doing. So, okay. I'll backtrack to tomorrow. So that was 22 points, I believe, right? And so if we have that, that becomes 11. Tamura has 10 points of armor, but because you succeeded on your roll, you also get your shield protection, which is 6 points. So effectively, you had 16 points of armor, and with 11 points of damage, you're fine.
Okay.
And same goes for Linnell. You know, half of 19 isn't even enough to get through your armor.
Do I take the 3 points of bruising from...
Yes, that you do take, because that's falling damage, and falling damage ignores armor because you bounce around regardless, right?
Gotcha. That's what I thought.
Okay, next I have Evrain.
Okay, so my charge is 15, and then with my success, I would make it 20. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Okay. So you cannot fail.
Right. I rolled a 6.
You can roll low, however. All right.
Yes.
I love that you were rolling super high right up until you got into combat. All right. Well, it is a brain's lucky day because I just fumbled my roll. Yes.
Eudemus.
Yes, indeed. I don't think the charge fumble table is in the quick start, but I'm gonna roll it anyway. So okay, so your opponent, he merely shatters his lance on your shield and gets a face full of flying splinters, okay? He does not manage to pole vault himself out of his saddle. So you can go ahead and roll your charger or your horse's damage. I think you have a charger.
Okay. Let's see here. I have a warhorse charger, yes. Okay. So I roll the 66 damage. Is that what I'm looking at? Okay.
That's correct.
20,
21, 23. Wow. Okay. So let's see. What's their size? Oh, yeah. These are beefy boys. So dex roll. Wow. Just not his lucky day. Rolled a 19. So at least he didn't fumble his dex roll. But this poor guy, he's got splinters in his face. He's just been dismounted. Oh boy. Ouch. Yeah, he's hurting. All right, so you have unseated your opponents. Well done. Well done, Sir Rain. Well, you are a seasoned mercenary after all, so. All right, and lastly, we have Cadwallon.
Okay. Okay, I have rolled a 14.
All right, 14 against my 4. So you win and may roll your horse damage.
Okay, it's 5d6, 5 6-sided dice. So that's 17. Okay, 19.
19, wow, okay. This guy dex rolls well. I rolled a 19 again, so down he goes too. So in what is possibly Cadwallon's first crossing of lances with an enemy knight, you have unseated your opponent.
Well, that's right. He's a
he's a squire.
An esquire, technically, since he's he aged out of squiredom without becoming a knight. So not a lawyer.
It predates lawyers.
Predates the lawyers. So funny to me that like that term sort of morphed, you know.
Right.
Like, you know, changed from being, yeah.
You see so few lawyers these days on horseback with lances.
Much to our loss, really. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So, so the way it works here is, let's see. Okay, so let's see who was we had Tamura was the only one unseated, right?
Yes, I believe that is correct.
All right, so if you are unseated, you are considered captured, and the knight who unseated you will lead you back to an area called the Reset, either themselves or they'll send their squire, or they can even signal a an official called a kipper.
But I will not hang my head in shame, though.
No, it was well fought. It was well fought. All right. Let's see here. Okay. So in a normal battle, from turn to turn, you choose your posture. You can be valorous, you can be reckless, you can be prudent, you can even be cowardly if you just really don't want to be there. By default, if you're starting the encounter with a mounted charge, like you all did, you are considered to be in valorous posture. So that means you're going to be fighting two combat rounds. So that was the first combat round. Tamura is out along with her knight. Cadwallon and Vrain both unseated your opponents. Do you want to lead those knights back to the Reset or send your squire to do it?
I would say it would be within his traits to take the lead rather than the squire.
Sure. You do it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And how about Cadwallon? Well, do you have a squire? I forget.
he has no squire.
Yes. Okay. So you have no choice. All right. So that really just leaves Linnell fighting here. You've executed your charge and the person contacted you and didn't knock you off your horse. So basically, you can continue fighting with your lance, but you would switch to the spear skill. Or you can throw down your lance and draw your sword.
I would throw down my lance and draw my sword.
Okay. So also just keep in mind that the passion bonus only applied to the charge skill. So we're just using our unmodified sword. Well, actually, it is modified because it's fighting with a kite shield, right? So it's a -2 to your sword skill. And so is your opponent. Now, he is actually he's an honorable chap. He's going to withhold his blows. So that means not only is his sword blunted, but he's not hitting you with his full force. Would you like to also pay him that courtesy?
I shall.
All right. So that would get you a check to your honor. And we'll see how we do on this sword versus sword contest.
Okay, I rolled a 15, so that's a fail.
All right. So you're sort of wheeling your horses around, you know, trying to, you know, sort of swinging at each other, trying to make contact, and it's just a mess. I mean, it's everywhere. It's just total chaos, right? And so you're kind of glancing off of his shield, and you know you're not really landing any decisive blows. But at one point, he tries to take a swing at you, sort of overbalances and watches in horror as his sword just like bounces out of his grip and, you know, disappears under the hooves of the horses, because I rolled a fumble. So,
nice.
But fortunately, you did not land any blows. So, you know, he got away with that at least. So normally this would be the point perhaps where, you know, he would call for a squire to bring him an extra weapon or what have you. But as, you know, the rest of you are either leading your prisoners back or being led back as prisoner, all of you become aware of some kind of tumult breaking out on the sidelines. You can all once again make awareness rolls.
Pass this time.
Fumbled. I rolled a 20.
Nope. Okay.
No dice for me. 14.
All right. How about
18?
18. All right. So Linnell, weirdly enough, you're the one person left on the field, but maybe that's, you know, you're closer to where this is happening. You hear a youth at the edge of the field near Fleet Street, like shouting something very excitedly. And there's a lot of like activity, like the tournament officials are running around and something's going on, clearly. And then suddenly the trumpet fanfare to signal the end of the melee is being blown. This is, you know, well before when it was supposed to be wrapped up. Knights are reining in their horses, looking around. Everyone's quite confused. And then you see this youth once again yelling, "The sword, the sword!" And you see him pointing frantically back towards the city, back towards St. Paul's. Back towards the location of a certain sword.
Oh.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still mounted, yes?
You are, indeed.
And so am I.
I shall ride in that direction.
Indeed.
I am not mounted.
You are not mounted. Now, you can make a dex roll to perform what's called the leap, where you do the cowboy thing of just like leaping over the rump of your horse and landing
in the saddle. Do it.
Oh, I'm totally going to do it. Because I remember doing it when I was knighted.
Yes, indeed.
My dex is 12. I rolled an 8.
Nice. All right. So, you know, your horse is being led as well. And, you know, you're just like, ha ha, you know, up under the saddle.
Yeah!
Yeah! All right. I assume everybody's taking off at this point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So, everyone.
I know why I'm here.
Yes. That's right. So everyone roll horsemanship. I'm going to say for Tamura, even though you succeeded on your leap, you didn't critically succeed. So you'll be at a -5 on your horsemanship.
Okay, fine.
All right.
I don't. Yeah, where it. Is it? Where's
horsemanship?
It's going to be under combat skills.
Found it.
Yeah,
found
it.
So thanks to my -5, which drops my horsemanship from a 15 to a 10, I rolled a 10, which means I got a crit.
Love it. Yes. That does happen.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
So basically, you turn up doing dressage moves.
Apparently. Yeah, exactly.
Just overtaking everybody. Like, just like, no. All right. And Roz, did you say you failed?
No, I rolled a 14. Oh. My horsemanship's a 15.
A 15. Okay, perfect, perfect. Did anybody fail?
Nope,
everyone I succeeded.
Nope, cool. Good.
Okay, so Tamura, you managed to leap your horse over like an intervening little wooden fence that had been erected to mark the edge of the field, and you very quickly make up lost ground and are shortly riding at the side of King Leodegrance himself. The rest of you are right behind. You know, nobody fell too far back.
Okay, good.
So let's see. So basically everybody is headed for Ludgate. And so it's creating this tremendous traffic jam as everyone tries to force their way through. It's a crushing mass. Everyone trying to go all at once. So your headway slows down considerably as you move into this bottleneck through the gatehouse, which is just amplifying the shouting and the screaming, and like, you know, like knights are like panicking, you know, because they don't know what's going on, and they want to, you know, their adrenaline's already pumping from the melee, and they're desperate to see, be the first to see what's going on. And now, you know, like a cork, you all go shooting out the other end of the gatehouse, and you know, you hear a tremendous crashing noise as one knight, you know, crashes into a street vendor's, you know, lean to, and then, you know, the screams of a man being trampled somewhere behind you, you know, but it's beginning to open up, and, you know, up ahead is St. Paul's looming into your vision. And then the grassy courtyard beyond. And yeah, more knights are pouring in behind, but you've gotten a pretty good position. In fact, for Tamura, you are among the first to enter the courtyard, thereby earning Fantastic. Some glory. Yes. And the rest of you are not far behind. And yeah, so you all have relatively front row seats alongside Liana Grants. And, you know, knights behind you are obliged to stand in their stirrups and crane their necks. But all of you see a familiar squire. That young lad, the likely boy. And he's standing there near the stone, watching everyone as they're filing in. And the sword is stuck in the anvil, and he looks awfully confused by all this sudden attention. So before we move on to the thrilling conclusion, we'll take a quick break.
All right. Well, we are all back, ready to go. David, take us away to the conclusion of this thing.
Indeed. So there, in addition to all the knights, there are a bunch of commoners. There, you know, the whole crowd is assembled, you know, people pouring in. Anyone who has religion pagan can roll against that.
I think that's going to be me.
All right.
Yeah. Oh, I do too.
Nice.
I just have religion any.
Well, that's what I have on the back, but on the front part of my character sheet, religion is pagan.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. But I failed.
Yeah, that's the thing is, yeah, it's
oh, yeah.
Fill in the blank with the religion it says. Yeah.
Yep. I failed too.
Two fails. Okay. And those of you who are Christian can roll against your religion skill.
I critted.
I failed.
A crit. Nice.
I rolled a five.
Good job.
Excellent. Okay. So for Linnell, you find yourself not too far away from none other than the Archbishop of Britain, Archbishop Dubricus. He's looking very serious. It looks like he's emerged from inside the cathedral, and he's watching the knights. He's looking at the squire. He's very curious what's going on. He catches your eye, and then you both, you know, resume taking in the scene. So there is this tremendous chattering, shouting babble. You know, he drew the sword. Who did? That lad there. Him? Impossible. Only the King of Britain could pull the sword. And then you see a very rough and tough looking knight. His helmet actually, you know, it's a little conical steel helmet, but it's got like a gold crown bolted to the rim of the helmet. He has a rather magnificent salt and pepper beard. And you can see even beneath his armor and padding and everything else. I mean, this guy is obviously a bear, essentially. He jumps down. You don't even need recognized roles to see that this is King Lot of Lothian. He's one of the most powerful kings of Britain. And he goes, "This thing is going to move. It'll move for me." And he lays his hand upon the sword grip, and he pulls at it, And his knights are like, you can do it, sire, you can do it, you know. And then he's like putting two hands to it and he's pulling, and you can see the muscles under his armor bulging out, but then his hands, you know, slip and he staggers backwards, and then a shout from the crowd, let the boy try. And he's like, yes, let the boy try. And you see an older knight. You recognize him from the alehouse yesterday. He was with the squire. He was Sir Kay's father. And he nods, and the youth lays one hand upon the sword and pulls it from the stone without any trouble whatsoever. And a collective gasp goes up from the crowd, and he slides it back into place.
Not what?
And so then you see another regal knight. This is King Urien's of Gore. You were fighting knights of Gore earlier, you'll recall. And like Lot before him, he dismounts and he says, well, if it's that easy, and he goes over and he gives it a good hard pull. He tries to like get his elbows crooked under the hilt, you know, he just tries everything. And it doesn't budge. And the lad once again steps forward, pulls it free effortlessly. And this time he just holds it in his hand and looks around with a sort of sheepish expression on his face, like maybe he did something wrong. But then someone shouts, he's the king! And Leondegrance, who's near you, and by the way, who I always cast as Patrick Stewart, so you can picture that in your mind.
Perfect.
He says, the boy drew the sword. The boy is the king. So what do you all think of this?
Oh, I mean, for me, it is, you know, it is a field day. Not only does my liege, you know, swear fealty to the new king of the Britons, but this lad who saved a sneak thief from stealing my coins turned out to be what I said he would be, a potential to be a just and noble knight. So yes, he is most definitely my king as far as I'm concerned. Although,
does anyone feel otherwise, I guess would be the question.
Tamora's got mixed emotions, like, you know, mixed feelings. Like she's here because, you know, Lady Vivian knows that, you know, the world is about to change, and she wanted Dame Tamora to be like, have a front row seat and witness it. But at the same time, you know, a single king of Britain was to be decided by this tournament. Obviously that's why she was here, to be part of that tournament and to help.
Are you saying rules are rules?
Well, rules are rules, but at the same time, you know, she has her own personal motto, is proof is in the, you know, proof is in deeds. True. And two well-seasoned knights and herself cannot pull that sword from the anvil, but the squire, you know, can, you know, he was able to pull it not once, but twice and maybe thrice from the anvil. So she's got some conflicting emotions. It's not that she's a disbeliever or anything. It's just, it's a lot to take in for her, but you know, she's knowing what it represents, and the legends behind it, behind the stone, the sword and in the stone. Yeah, it's a lot to take in, but she's basically in the same camp as everybody else.
Cadwallon looks upon this as a sign of things to come. If a young squire can be raised to to the throne, then there is hope for him being knighted.
I mean, I need a squire, another squire.
Yeah, you want to stay there. You want to stay in that position.
Mine might be up for a new hire, considering he had to clean out my chamber pot last night. That -3 constitution didn't come from anywhere.
It was explosive.
So, sorry, go on.
How about Linnell? How's Linnell feel about all this?
Linnell look on this, and not necessarily with indifference, but again, in her heart, this was not something that she aspired to. She knew she was never going to pull the sword out and be king.
Right.
She has other things to do.
Indeed. So, so yes, as these are thoughts are passing through your respective heads, King Lot draws his own sword, his own rebated sword, keep in mind, and strides towards the boy. His guards dismount a few steps behind him. Lot looks rather murderous. Does anyone want to do anything?
Linnell would definitely.
I love it. All right. So even though you're just kind of observing, you're also just like, no, you're not going to do that.
Wait, Lot's got a murder in his eye. Then
he's got murder in his eyes, and he's heading for the squire.
No, that's not going to happen.
That's a no.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of can't let that happen.
All right. So all of you are spurring your horses forward, and it's kind of like riot control, right? Like all you have to do is just kind of interpose your horse between Lot and this boy, because he's on foot as well. And I'll say, since Roz, since you were the first to respond, Linnell is the first to kind of block that path. And the king looks surprised and then affronted and slashes at you.
It's okay. He's not a real king.
King Lot. I assume you are armed. You have weapon in hand. So the good news is that since you're mounted and he's not, you get a +5 to your weapon skill, and he gets a -5.
That's going to be my sword.
Uh-huh.
So a +5 makes that a 2-0. Let's see what we can do with that.
Nice.
That's a 5. Dang it.
Oh, all right. I rolled a 16 against his modified sword skill of 18. So he's going to whack at you with his sword, but it is rebated. So, wow. But I did roll quite a few sixes. So, Lot is, he's a tough guy. Okay. So the good news is you succeeded in your roll, which means you're going to get your shield protection. So you'll have 16 points of armor protection. I rolled a total of 26. So that's 13. So you don't actually take any damage. However, he does hit you hard enough to automatically knock you off your saddle.
That's fine, but he's redirected from the boy.
He very much is. So a general melee is going to break out. So the rest of you are going to get a chance to take on some of Lot's bodyguard here. So we'll go with Cadwallon first.
Okay.
And so you're mounted, they're not. You get a +5 to your sword.
Am I okay to use my... I'll be using my spear. It's my main weapon, so...
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that gives me 20.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pity of the +5, because otherwise that would have been dead on for my spear skill. But anyway, 15.
It gives and it takes away, see? Yeah. I like that we got both examples, though, like getting a modifier that turns it into a crit and getting a modifier that robs you of a crit.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Speaking of crits, I just rolled one.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
Giveth and taketh? Or taketh and
giveth? Yes. Yeah.
All right. So that's going to be 9d6 damage total. Good news is, again, it's rebated. So let's see, 10, 13, 15, 16, still quite enough, 16, 20. Well, hey, that's weird. I actually rolled less than what Lot did with a normal success. So 24, so that's 12 points. You made your roll. So, but Cadwallon has kind of funky armor, doesn't he? What does he have? He has 13. All right, so your armor still protects you with the shield. You're fine there. And go ahead and make a dex roll to stay in your saddle.
9, which is under my dex, so I make it.
All right, great. All right. Next, we'll do Ivrain.
Question, can I use my honor passion to raise my sword skill?
Actually, I will suggest you use your adoration passion. You can invoke that at any time for any reason, because all you have to do is picture the lady in your mind. And if you get any kind of success, it's a plus 10.
Ooh, nice.
No. No. Yeah, it's a, that failed.
All right, that's fine.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's hard to concentrate in battle.
God, stop thinking about her sister.
Okay, so I just roll my straight sword.
Just
okay.
Straight, yeah, exactly.
Oh no, that's a 19.
Ah, and I got a 6, so that's suitable for me. And 10. Ooh, these dice are all over the place. 24. So, you failed, didn't you?
Yes.
Okay, so you don't get your shield protection, unfortunately, which means that even with the rebated damage being halved, you take a 2 point, and your size is 11, so you are automatically knocked from your saddle.
Oh,
womp womp.
And lastly, right. Tamura.
I am not impassioning anything. I am just going to
yeah.
I'm going to reach out and touch somebody. So with the plus 5, that takes me using my arming sword up to a 20. I rolled a 17 for a success.
All right, brilliant. And I failed straight up. So go ahead. So in this case, you roll the damage indicated for your weapon.
All right.
It's usually either 4 or 5.
That's going to be 5d6.
Okay.
That is 8, 10, 11, 14.
14. All right. So let's see. His size is 17. Mm-hmm. So, no danger of a knockdown. Obviously, no damage with the rebated blade, but you do fend him off. So the fact that half of you were knocked from your saddles actually kind of illustrates the general scrum that has broken out here now, just completely completely taking away from any pretense of pomp or circumstance or dignity. And in fact, one of the Lot's men, you know, kind of slips through the cordon of horses and goes for the boy who's still holding the sword from the anvil. And Linnell, as you're picking yourself up, you just see him sort of just you see the youth just sort of casually dispatch the Knight of Lothian. You know, the sword just like cuts right through his armor like it's nothing. And the guy goes down bleeding, one of several injuries, if not outright casualties, inflicted. And so basically the four of you bought enough time for the rest of the knights led by Liana Grants to kind of surge forward and, you know, push back against the knights of Lothian and Gore. And, Liana Grants is shouting from his saddle, like, "He is my right, the king! He drew the sword!" And Lot shouts back and like, "No, beardless boy shall ever be my king." And others are agreeing, like, No mind. You know. And the autograph says, "I say he is my king." And he dismounts and kneels before the squire. The squire looks around and he says, "As I am king, I accept your offer." Mm-hmm. And so,
yeah,
you are close by to this. You have a chance to be among the first knights to swear loyalty.
Oh.
Yeah, having protected him, I will go for. I will dismount and go forward, and I will say loudly, "I am no knight, but I swear my fealty all the same to the new king."
Mm. Love that. And so, as Liana Grants and then Cadwallon take a knee, and the rest of you follow, and then soon, like most of the crowd is kneeling, leaving just this sort of significant minority looking on, seething. And then there's a moment of quiet grace, and then Lot breaks it by throwing his rebated sword clattering to the cobblestones, and he goes, "I'll be back with a sword that won't fail me." And he leaps atop his horse, and with the guards a half step behind him, and they all pivot and gallop off, heedless of those who they nearly trample. And so as they ride off, the boy's father takes that as the cue, and he raises his sword and he says, "Hail, King Arthur!" And the crowd echoes, "Hail, King Arthur!" And again, "Hail, King Arthur!" And finally, "Hail, King Arthur!" And so we conclude.
Yay! Huzzah! I would then get in, does Nigel Terry look like he's 34? Because he certainly doesn't look like a kid.
They have to cast for the whole life span.
Oh yeah, it's not easy. Yes,
bravo. They didn't have CGI back bravo
then. Yeah, bravo. Excellent. Yeah,
yeah. So no, that was great, you guys. That was a lot of fun. So
no, I appreciate you definitely running it for us, running it for our frequent flyer guest Pookie, who's been chomping at the bit and badgering me since Gen Con, because he volunteered me at our Gen Con accommodations that I was going to run it for people.
Well, you are the experienced Pendragon game master in the group.
Yeah, well, that I am, but I just haven't gotten to it yet. So,
And to be perfectly honest, too, I was about ready to volunteer it because I would have liked to have had the practice before the con game. But then Keith, coincidentally said, "Hey, I'm going to ask David if he wouldn't mind running this for the podcast." And right then and there, I just zipped my mouth and said, "OK."
That's fantastic. That's fantastic, Scott. What are you running instead for us?
That's right.
That's for another episode. But David, do you mind if if any of the players have a couple of questions or anything? You got time to field a few questions?
Absolutely. There's just one last bit of bookkeeping, which of course is glory.
Oh yeah.
Oh yes. Ooh, let's glory. Not forget the glory.
Yes.
Now, interestingly enough, we actually came out with a tie for the highest amount of glory, which was between Tamura and Linnell. I would suppose that you both get bragging rights. I don't know, but
I think that's okay. Know. Yeah. I would share bragging rights.
You share the victory. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, you can easily share bragging rights. You don't live that far.
No, we actually live in the same town, so I'll buy her a beer.
There you
in
go.
In real life, I'll buy her a beer next time we get together.
There you go, Pookie. You go. I'll be running a tournament after Strategicon between these two and see, have them go against the Joust. And
there we go.
Winner takes all bragging rights.
We'll break out Book of Battles, second edition. Followed by the Book of Feasts.
You're brave.
So, well, why don't we start with Roz. Roz, do you have any questions for David or any comments you have about the game that you played tonight?
I don't have any questions, but it was very enjoyable.
Nice.
I
glad
love
to hear that.
Linnell. Mm-hmm. I love her.
I know.
She's
one of my faves as well. Yeah.
I guess a good question for you would be then if as this is part of the coming starter set, box set, would you then, after you've already had a taste of it, would you as a player then be compelled to carry on to the other adventures that are provided?
Definitely.
Excellent.
Definitely. Nice.
Oh, great. So Scott, that's what you're running for us.
I mean, whenever it comes out.
Brilliant. Thanks.
Well, glad Scott volunteered. Not me. No, it's all good.
Pookie.
Yeah, Pookie.
Well, okay, so really enjoyed that. Thank you, David, for running that. And I'm a longtime fan of Pendragon. I sort of like first played it back in '85 with the first box set. One of the major changes you would say between the editions 5.1, 5.2, and the new edition, sixth edition coming out soon?
Great question. You know, the differences between the latest edition and this one are not huge. Obviously, if you were going to look at first edition, then yes, there have been quite a few changes structurally, I'd say. But, you know, Greg referred to sixth edition as his ultimate edition. And I think what he meant by that was just basically saying, like, sixth edition reflects, like, his ultimate vision of what he always wanted Pendragon to be. And so in that sense, there's a lot of, like, kind of smaller changes sprinkled around, you know, like armor is a little different. Like, it's kind of stackable now instead of it just being like one type, you know, like I'm wearing reinforced mail. It's like, no, actually wearing an Akaton with a hauberk and an open, you know, helmets. And then, you know, we saw how there's going to be differences in like what kind of shields you use. You know, so little things like that, that I just think add some extra medieval flavor to the whole thing. You know, the passions, obviously, I think are probably the biggest change because like in the older editions, if you fumbled a passion roll, you just instantly went mad. Whereas now, if you fumble a passion roll, it's not as bad, actually. And just so you guys know, like I was actually just kind of running a simplified version of like how the passion system works, because normally you would kind of roll to see if you have like a passion crisis, if you fail, you know, and then there's chances for melancholy and stuff like that. But you know, this is the quick start demo scenario. So, you know, it was, you know, just kind of streamlining it. But I found in gameplay that, you know, that encourages people to try their passion roles more often. Cause in the past people would be like, oh, I don't want to try that. Cause you know, I might go mad, or, you know, it's a low value passion. So, you know, I might, you know, I'll more likely fail than not. And then, you know, so I kind of like how that works. You know, it's sort of like if you have a low value passion, it's okay because, you know, chances are nothing will happen if you fail. Let's see what else. I mean, yeah, just a lot of little things, you know, just a lot of small changes. The most significant ones, you know, are going to be summarized in the back of the core rule book for people coming in from fifth edition. And that'll let them update their character, basically, you know.
Yeah, I mean, for example, I mean, I'm just looking at the combat skills. There's no lance skill.
Right, exactly. So it's that's now like a charge skill, which usually you use with a lance, but you can use it with any weapon, really. So if you want to just go charging in with your sword, you can do that. Now, the lance is the most sort of like advantageous weapon to use with your charge skill, but nobody's like forcing you to use it, you know.
Okay. What other questions you got for him, Pookie?
This is the start of this is the sort of like the introductory adventure in the starter set. What are the other adventures in the starter set gonna be?
Oh yeah. So yeah, that's actually act one of the introductory adventures. So that I find that one usually takes a good 2 to 3 sessions to play through because it's pretty action-packed. And that's basically, you know, the year of the boy king. So, you know, act one is your what we just played. And then act two is kind of like the aftermath. So we saw how the northern kingdoms were refusing to recognize Arthur. Well, the rest of that adventure is you know, seeing the consequences of that, basically. And then there's two other adventures. So it takes you through 3 game years. So you can kind of experience the flow of the game. You've got the winter phase and, you know, your characters get some chance to, you know, boost their stats, you know, with experience. So, yeah, the second adventure, you know, basically continues the narrative, you know, of this war with the Northern Kings. And, you know, you're running that kind of shifts because in the first adventure, it's not well, if you've seen the image of the starter set box, which is already kind of floating around there. Yeah. That art depicts sort of a climactic scene from the first scenario. And it's a big battle, of course, you know. Second scenario now was like kind of almost like covert ops because you're working on behalf of Arthur to like gather allies, right? And then the third adventure kind of wraps things up and involves you in some very legendary events, I'll just say.
And you think, is there any opportunity for romance in these adventures? Because that's always a big thing, certainly in the long term, for a Pendragon game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's actually one of the reasons why I gave Sir Vrain an adoration passion is because I did want to have a possibility if a player takes him for the campaign, that we would have a baked in sort of romance subplot, right? You know, because I mean, honestly, you know, the scenarios are there to just provide the kind of backbone of the campaign, but
right,
you know, if Sir Vrain's player wants to keep going back to Londinium to, you know, woo this lady of the White Tower, that's, you know, their prerogative. So so yeah, the scenarios themselves, since they are set in early in Arthur's reign, which is a very tumultuous time, you know, they're mostly centered around, you know, politics and war and, you know, that kind of thing, which is, you know, the bread and butter of the knights anyway, you know. But we do have some other scenarios that will be coming out in, let's say, early on as we're rolling out, you know, the new edition. And that will sort of like advance things. If you're playing the starter set, that will sort of advance things along. And at that point, you know, Arthur meets Guinevere and there's a bit more, you know, kind of courtly stuff going on. So, so we do plan to like kind of release product that people who buy the starter set can then buy that to sort of continue going, you know, obviously, you know, want folks to buy the core rule books too, but, you know, if you just want to keep running these characters, you know, here's some more scenarios you guys could use.
Cool. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Well, Scott, what did you think? Do you feel prepared to run this?
I do. I feel a lot more confident because, I mean, I have read through it a couple times and it's kind of my format. I need to kind of read and reread. And then when I finally get it to the table, just kind of put the pieces together. But yes, I do feel a lot more prepared. I have a, you know, it's, there is certain carryovers from things such as RuneQuest, so passions and whatnot, you know, the opposing traits, similar. So I mean, the concept is there, even though the roles are a little bit slightly different, but still the same. Was there,
but technically the carryover is the other direction.
Correct. Yes. I mean, that's the only caveat, but I mean that again, it's not like reinventing the wheel, you know, it's not something that's fully baked in. It's like, I don't know what's going on, but with that, so I will have more time running this because this is a 4-hour time slot and, you know, proven it's not, and it doesn't need to run that time. That's just the shortest time slot the con provides. So sure, with that, you know, this, I see this as any sort of quick start as kind of like a taste test. Was there anything that you would recommend within the quick start that maybe you didn't touch upon, or maybe something that I could provide a little bit more just to make sure that there's a couple things, you know, a couple extra things covered within the scenario, just to give them a more, you know, all-encompassing aspect of the game? I know there's a lot of stuff on the character sheets that aren't even touched upon because it's from the quick start. So it's
right. Exactly.
Will be coming later, but anything within the scenario, that maybe, you know, you maybe skipped over or something you just, you know, didn't do within the time provided, but, any recommendation like that?
Well, you know, I mean, obviously you can really sort of play out the first part where you're sort of exploring the city, you know, like you could do multiple roles on the city exploration table, yeah, for example, and just, you know, have a lot of fun with that. Or you could like elaborate that encounter with Merlin. Maybe he actually comes over and talks to the players or, you know, whatever. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Sorry, go ahead.
And I mean, and if you wanted to, you could also extend the tournament melee by another battle turn, let's say, you know, yeah, like run the Knights of Gore. You can even do three, you know, just run Knights of Gore turn one, Knights of Lothian turn two, and charge King Lot's Conroy, which is the opportunity, on turn three, you know, run a nice little mini battle.
And another quick question, because I don't know if this is in the rules, but this is just more a personal thing. So when I lost my 3 constitution, how would that be applied to my current hit points? How are constitution and hit points coalesced?
So hit points are your constitution plus your size. So it's just the two added together.
And, got it. Perfect. Yeah. Okay. And let's see. I think Did Sir Evrain actually have a chance with the Lady of the White Tower, or is he just fooling himself?
You'll have to play to find out.
That's right.
Oh,
that's the answer for everything.
All right. All right.
The thing with the adoration passion is that if you ever consummate your relationship, then it turns into a love passion and the value immediately reduces by half.
Oh, okay.
So it's actually in your best interest to never try and, you know, seal the deal. It's just, you know, you're just supposed to moon over her for the rest of your life, basically.
Right. And not do the whole, you know, get angry every time you're brushing your teeth next to her going, she just doesn't do it the right way. God damn it.
No, I only have one question, and it, and it kind of goes and it kind of plays into the question that Pookie asked about changes. So last month, for our reading club, book club, we read this, right? So we read The Quick Start, and one of the club members had a question on the melancholy rules, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know that I did it a service in answering his question, so I thought I would just kind of throw it out here. Because who better to address it than you, right? So he basically wanted to know, how does it work when you fail when you fumble that passion roll, because that's when it's triggered.
Or fail.
How does it work, and at what point does it take a character out of the game and become a game master character? And you know, what's it in terms of gameplay? How long is that actually, like, what's the duration of that in reality?
Sure. So, I mean, there's a little bit of GM fiat there. Like, so for example, I ran this scenario at Chaosium Con last year, and one of the players, you know, failed their passion role and then succeeded on the passion crisis role, and became melancholy. And it was during the tournament melee. So I said, oh yeah, well, you're all pumped up right now, so the melancholy is not going to kick in until after the melee. And she's like, no, I want to be melancholy now. I'm like, okay, you know, like, that's cool. So, you know, sometimes I'll like delay the onset of melancholy or madness if you're in the middle of battle or, you know, something else significant is going on. But it really is just kind of up to the GM, both in terms of like when it hits and like how long it lasts. Now, in the core rules, of course, there's guidelines for, you know, it's sort of pinned to the value of your passion. So if you have a lower passion, then the melancholy lasts like a day, and if you go mad from it, I think it's like 1d6 days or something like that, you know. But obviously, if you have a really high passion, that's when you're going to be melancholic for weeks, and you're going to, if you go mad, no one's going to hear from you for years, you know. And at that point, I mean, you know, Pendragon's the sort of game where it pays to have a backup character, at least if not created, then at least in mind, you know, that you can, you know, that's one of the reasons why we have 8 pre-generated characters in the starter set, because it's kind of like, wow, your character just took a nasty blow to the head and is no more. Here's another pre-generated character. You know, or they went mad. And so they'll come back at some point. But in the meantime, you can play Sir Evrain, you know. So.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Oh, cool. Thanks for answering that.
Sure.
All right. Any last reattacks from anybody? Any last questions?
I am good. Can I just play this at the table and just cut out our voices and just have David run it for them?
I don't think that's how it works, but no, you can try.
No, it
would be tough to sync things up, I think.
Yeah, no, but I am more confident than ever, so I'm looking forward to running this.
Good.
And hey, we managed to get through the whole of this without one Monty Python reference.
And we're going to finish this wrap up without one. So let's keep it there.
Make it quick.
All right. So with that, Roz, Pookie, thanks for playing. David, thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule and your evening to come run it for us. So we could, you know, entertain these guys and put it out as our next episode. Muchas gracias, my friend.
Absolutely.
I greatly appreciate it. God, I can't even talk tonight. I'm tired. I greatly appreciate it. You know, anytime you want to come back on the show and talk about Pendragon, we're always happy to have you. As you know, it's one of my favorite games, so I'm happy to talk about it, happy to play it. So,
yeah, absolutely.
I will refrain from asking you when it's going to release because I know Chaosium has not made an official announcement, so I'm not going to ask you and put you on the spot. So
yeah.
I will give you a reprieve from that this time, but next time maybe not so much.
Right. Yeah, right. Hopefully it'll be out by the time I'm on next. So
I hope so. Wait, you're on next week? What? No. I know. I'm a funny guy. But again, thank you so much. Scott, any last from you?
Sure. No. I think all I have to say is listeners, if you enjoyed this, you know, please let us know. If you have any questions or comments, definitely shoot us an email at titterpigspod@gmail.com. And if you have, anything to say about the session, we would definitely love to hear from you. Pookie, thank you again.
Thank you for being on. Yeah.
Roz, always a pleasure. I'm glad you were able to join us tonight.
As was I.
All right. So last thing before we go, I know Roz doesn't do the social media things, but you can find her on the Rolling Boxcars Discord. She likes to hang out there. And that's where the Titter Pigs also resides, on the Rolling Boxcars Discord. Pookie, where can people find you on social media?
You can find me on the Rolling Boxcars Discord, but you can also find me at Reviews from Really A Blogspot, where I post my reviews, including a review of the previous edition of Pendragon, and also on my YouTube channel, Unboxing in the Nook, where I actually unboxed a first edition copy of Pendragon.
True story. And David, where can people find you on social media?
Oh, I am at Sir Larkins on all the usual places. Not terribly active, but I'm there. So if you want to follow me, that's fine. I retweet from time to time.
All right. And you guys know where to find Scott and I on all the social medias. So we are there. We do our thing. And as always, shoot us emails. And we are out of here.
Run away! Run away!
Oh my God.
There it is! He did it!
He did it.
Cool.
Be still. Sleep. Rest in the arms of the dragon. Dream.